This episode of the Children's Literature Podcast is brought to you by Bubble Machines. Bubble Machines. Guaranteed to keep your kids away from you for at least 4.5 minutes. Welcome to the Children's Literature Podcast. I'm your host, TQ Townsend. This episode is called Is Yorkshire Speech in the Secret Garden Accurate? I'm really excited about today's episode, in which my guest is Rodney Dimbleby, the chair of the Yorkshire Dialect Society. He's been very generous in helping me research the use of language in the Secret Garden, and I have some fun projects going on in this area that I'll tell you more about soon. I also wanted to share an interesting comment I got about the Secret Garden from listener Kate. She had this to say about the attitudes of Mary Lennox and Colin Craven toward different dialects, as well as some thoughts on what their own speech must have sounded like. She said, quote, "I love Colin and Mary's absolute lack of snobbery. They're children and don't laugh at the Yorkshire dialect or see it as beneath them, but want to speak it because the people they love speak it. I also wondered, to tell the truth, how Colin had an upper-class accent anyway, when he had only ever been brought up by servants. That confused me. Children learn the accents and dialects of those around them, and his father spent next to no time with him. Likewise, Mary. She probably would have picked up an Indian accent, as she spent so little time with her parents or people of their class." End quote. I had never considered this issue before and find these ideas fascinating. We know that Colin hasn't spent his entire life at Misselthwaite. He's spent time at seaside resorts and done a bit of traveling, but he's mostly been kept at home with no playmates, only speaking to his doctor, who's also his uncle, and the servants. Mrs. Medlock seems to be the only one who is fully able to switch to standard speech, with everyone else speaking Yorkshire. It seems very likely he would have at least had a general northern sound to his words, even if he wouldn't have learned any children's slang or regional vocabulary, and he wouldn't have heard people saying the or the instead of you. Mary's accent might be similarly muddled. It would seem that most of her childhood conversations would have been with servants. In chapter 13, Mary sings a song in Hindustani to Colin to help him sleep, indicating the language spoken by the people who raised her. Hindustani is an older term for the overlapping spectrum of dialects that are today grouped as either being Hindi or Urdu. However, Mary did occasionally have an English governess, and in chapter 4 she shows enough snobbery about the difference between herself and a servant that I think she probably would have done her best to speak with the clipped, proper sound of an upper-class British colonial. These questions are so fascinating because, as a written work, we can only see the silent letters on the pages of The Secret Garden and imagine what the author intended. As far as I can tell, Frances Hodgson Burnett left behind no audio recordings or commentary about the sounds of the characters. Everything I've ever read about The Secret Garden uncritically accepts the book as a good example of Yorkshire speech. It must be reasonably good, because the book is too famous and nobody has ever said, well, this is completely wrong. I have started to wonder how close to the bullseye Burnett was in her representation of the dialect, though. She was from Manchester, and the Mancunian dialect is very different from what you hear in Yorkshire. Burnett also left the north of England at the age of 16 and never lived there again, splitting the rest of her time between Washington, D.C., the south of England, the European continent, and New England. As a Californian, I can easily tell if someone is from Los Angeles or San Francisco, but I just don't have the experience to say for sure if someone is from Sheffield or Whitby. I reached out to the Yorkshire Dialect Society for some expert help with my research on The Secret Garden, and they've been delightful to collaborate with. The Society has been around since 1897 and works to study and record the Yorkshire dialect. They have not previously looked at The Secret Garden as an example of Yorkshire speech, so this is a fun new research opportunity for all of us. I selected three passages from The Secret Garden that I felt gave a good example of the personality of the character speaking, as well as their Yorkshire dialects. Then I asked Mr. Dimbleby if he would read them out in dialect and provide his analysis. He very kindly agreed, recommending a West Riding accent, so I sent him the passages. What he sent back was fascinating, because he observed some areas where the Yorkshire dialect wasn't represented quite accurately. I had never even thought about this. From the beginning, I just took it for granted that the dialect as written in the book was correct. Burnett didn't make massive mistakes, misrepresent Yorkshire speech, or treat Yorkshire speakers with any kind of disrespect. The dialect is overall written out very well. But Mr. Dimbleby found that there were examples of words that were used incorrectly, such as nothing instead of note. He also identified some places where a different spelling of a word written in dialect might have better helped readers pronounce the words correctly. He recorded these passages for me, not as Burnett wrote them, but as he felt they would be spoken by a native Yorkshire speaker. After we hear the passages, I'll give some theories about why Burnett wrote them the way she did. I strongly recommend that you read along while listening so that you can see the difference between Burnett's writing and Mr. Dimbleby's modifications to turn them into full dialect. Everything is posted in the show notes for this episode at childrensliteraturepodcast.com. As you'll see, Mr. Dimbleby's changes are subtle, but they really help get the flavor of the language just right. If you want to read along, pause the episode here and then restart after you've got the notes in front of you. This first selection is from Chapter 4. Mary Lennox has spent the day exploring the grounds of Misselthwaite Manor and discovered that there's a walled-off area that she can't get into. She starts fishing for information about the garden, but finds everyone to be very tight-lipped, including the gardener, Ben Weatherstaff.
He took no notice of her, and so at last she spoke to him. "I have been into the other gardens," she said. "There were naught to prevent thee." "I went into the orchard." "There were no dog at door to bite thee." "There was no door there into the other garden," said Mary. "What garden?" he said in a rough voice, stopping his digging for a moment.
You'll notice the word spelled N-O-W-T is pronounced note, as if you took the word note, but slipped a bit of W sound in after the O. It's often mispronounced nout in audio versions of The Secret Garden. Mr. Dimbleby explained that this pronunciation is normal farther west in Lancashire, but it's generally out of character for Yorkshire. Another correction he made was to change was to were, which in dialect is pronounced war. In many dialects of English, the verb to be has simplified conjugations. Language snobs will call this lazy or uneducated, but I've also read persuasive arguments by linguists that say it makes the language more consistent and less confusing to learn. In African American vernacular, you'll often hear I was, you was, he or she was, we was, you was, and they was. In Yorkshire, you hear I were, you were, he or she were, we were, you were, they were. You would only add an R at the end of were if the next word starts with a vowel, such as I were out, meaning I was out. The linguistic trend in both of these dialects is the same. Each just picked a different conjugation. Mr. Dimbleby recommended changing the spelling of thee from T-H-E-E to T-H-I. This spelling encourages a slightly shorter pronunciation when you read it aloud. You'll also notice that the correct pronunciation isn't a hard E sound, but something halfway between E and I, the. He also changed the dialect spelling of the word the from T-H apostrophe to just the letter T with an apostrophe. The word the is reduced to just t in most parts of Yorkshire. Writing it out as TH, the way Burnett did, can cause readers to mistakenly pronounce it as th. Although in a few places, such as Holmfirth, they do say it that way. The second selection is from Chapter 7 and features Martha Sowerby openly acknowledging the low social and economic status of her Yorkshire accent. She explains to Mary without shame or questioning that under ordinary circumstances, she would never have been able to get the job she has, and provides a heartfelt description of what she loves about her homeland.
"I thought perhaps it always rained or looked dark in England," Mary said. "Eh, no," said Martha, sitting up on her heels among her black lead brushes. "Not at Soot." "What does that mean?" asked Mary seriously. "In India, the natives spoke different dialects, which only few people understood, so she was not surprised when Martha used words she did not know." Martha laughed, as she had done the first morning. "There now," she said, "I've talked broad Yorkshire again like Mrs. Medlock said I mustn't." "Not at Soot means nothing of the sort," slowly and carefully, "but it takes so long to say it. Yorkshire's sunniest place on earth when it is sunny. I tell thee I'd like moor after a bit. Just thee wait till I sees gold-coloured gorse blossoms and blossoms of broom, and tether flowering, all purple bells, and hundreds of butterflies and bees humming and skylarks soaring up and singing. Thou want to get out on it at sunrise and live out in it all day like Dickon does."
If you're reading along, you can see how much more heavily edited the text is. It makes for slower reading at first, but once you get the hang of it, it's much easier to produce the right sounds. Mr. Dimbleby included some very thoughtful notes on this passage, pointing out that the use of the word you is not part of the Yorkshire dialect, so it was replaced with the and tha. But he identified one sentence where Martha uses no dialect at all. "There now. I've talked broad Yorkshire again like Mrs. Medlock said I mustn't." Mr. Dimbleby explained,
"Martha must be deliberately making an effort to speak standard English here, as there is no dialect in it at all. It would be understandable if a natural dialect speaker trying to speak standard English had some inconsistencies. It would probably be a bit of a mixture. Indeed, a natural dialect speaker, when conversing with someone who speaks posh, may well adapt their speech in any case, also resulting in utterances which may not be perfect dialect."
This is likely why Martha alternates between the use of the and you in Burnett's original text. As far as spelling modifications, Mr. Dimbleby suggested that the words take and make could be spelled either as T-E-K and M-E-K or T-A-K and M-A-K. These are the closest two options to encourage readers to say tick and mick. The last passage is from Chapter 10, and it's a conversation between Mary and Dickon Sowerby. Dickon is Martha's younger brother. He's 12 and spends his days out roaming the moors, filling the role of an idealized noble savage. Dickon speaks with the thickest dialect, using the and the, but occasionally saying you, showing the same kind of inconsistency as his sister Martha when she was attempting to speak standard English to Mary.
"Where's that robin that's calling us?" he said. The chirp came from a thick holly bush, bright with scarlet berries, and Mary thought she knew whose it was. "Is it really calling us?" she asked. "Aye," said Dickon, as if it was the most natural thing in the world. "It's calling somebody's friends way. That's same as saying, 'Here I am, look at me. I want a bit of a chat. There he is in bush. Who's is he?' 'He's Ben Weatherstaff's, but I think he knows me a little,'" answered Mary. "Aye, he knows thee," in his low voice again. "And he likes thee. He's took thee on. He'll tell me all about thee in a minute."
This passage presents the heaviest use of dialect, and that complicates things for writers. If the words are modified too heavily from standard spelling, they can become difficult to read. But if you don't modify them, readers won't pronounce them correctly. Mr. Dimbleby explained to me that it was very important that the letter H is never pronounced in the Yorkshire dialect when it comes at the beginning of a word. Authors have to decide how to write that out.
In the 19th and early 20th century dialect writing, H's were written in, but everybody knew not to pronounce them. Most dialect writers in recent history replaced the H with an apostrophe. Personally, I prefer to write them in, but with a note, if appropriate, that they are not pronounced. If you're not careful, Yorkshire dialect writing can be littered with apostrophes. In the pieces above, the G on ing has been replaced by an apostrophe, which is what most dialect writers do. However, the apostrophe is not necessary here, as there is surely no ambiguity, so personally I leave them out.
Mr. Dimbleby had some heavy edits for certain words, such as spelling knows, K-N-A-W-S. That can seem extreme, but it really is the most accurate spelling, and you can easily recognize the word because of context. He also spelled about A-B-A-H-T, and said that similarly you could spell town and down, T-A-H-N and D-A-H-N. So, why are there differences between Burnett's writing and the more fully authentic version of Yorkshire speech that you've heard? It's possible that Burnett just messed up. She slipped and wrote you instead of thee sometimes because she just forgot. I don't think Burnett is this sloppy, though. She's extremely meticulous about her use of dialect in all three of her children's novels, to the point that she would have noticed mistakes of inconsistency. Another possibility is that writing in dialect is subjective, so readers will just interpret Burnett's intentions differently. There are no standard spellings for non-standard speech. It's possible that Burnett wrote TH apostrophe and wanted it to be pronounced T, the way you just heard Mr. Dimbleby speak it. Maybe the H is in there because there is a slight puff of air when a speaker says T. It's hard to know exactly what an author intends, and the way people understand language shifts over time. When I read the line where Martha says the word spelled E-H, at first I assumed it was pronounced A, but now I understand it's more likely to be A. If Burnett heard me say that, she might reply, "How could you have read it that way? When I wrote it, I absolutely meant for you to say A." I think Burnett's too capable of a writer to make sloppy mistakes. This can only be an opinion, but I think she intentionally lightened the dialect in the book at times for two reasons. First, sometimes a Yorkshire speaker is addressing Mary Lennox, who as an upper-class girl is a speaker of the poshest of the posh dialects. As Mr. Dimbleby pointed out when he analyzed the quote from Chapter 7, Martha intentionally tries to speak standard English, causing her to say you and your instead of the and thy on occasion. This is probably also what is happening at other points in the story, when Dickon and Ben Weatherstaff speak with Mary. She's a complete outsider to Yorkshire, so both out of understanding for that, and out of deference to her higher social status, the Yorkshire speakers will use more standard words around her. Another consideration Burnett would have had to wrestle with is the fact that she was writing a book for children who are really going to struggle if the spelling of the words in the book are too heavily modified from standard English. Children have yet to master standard spellings, so it might be very difficult for them to figure out words written in dialect. It will always be easier for young readers to master new vocabulary such as thee and marred, rather than dealing with, as Mr. Dimbleby so ably put it, a passage littered with apostrophes. By having Yorkshire speakers occasionally say you instead of the, young readers unfamiliar with the dialect will have enough familiar words to latch on to that they won't get lost in unfamiliar speech patterns. Mr. Dimbleby's modified passages do result in a reading that more accurately reflects the traits of Yorkshire speech, but they also require a little more effort to read until you get used to the style. This task of reading heavy dialect would be difficult for young readers, who have yet to master standard spelling. I feel Burnett did a good job splitting the difference, putting enough modifications in to add seasoning to the sound, but not so many that children will struggle to comprehend them. Still, because the writing and reading of dialect is so subjective, it's very easy for readers to pronounce substantial portions of The Secret Garden incorrectly when reading aloud. I've started thinking that maybe what this book needs is a pronunciation guide. I'm very grateful to the Yorkshire Dialect Society, and especially its chair, Rodney Dimbleby, for helping me with this episode. Visit yorkshiredialectsociety.org.uk to hear audio samples of speech from the different regions of Yorkshire. The Society also collects folklore and publishes research done by its members. Rodney Dimbleby also has a website at roddimbleby.co.uk, where you can learn about his background as a storyteller, folklorist, and dedicated scholar of the Yorkshire dialect. I think your kids might enjoy reading his book, Tales from a Yorkshire Grandad, which contains 9 stories full of the wit and wisdom that Yorkshire folk are famous for. I'll leave a link to Mr. Dimbleby's site in the show notes so you can get yourself a copy. You've been listening to the Children's Literature Podcast. Please subscribe and give the show a rating. Send comments to letters@childrensliteraturepodcast.com. I'm your host, TQ Townsend. Thanks for listening.